For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
My name is Ryan, and we're doing a workshop called Satan is on Your Leadership Team. Now, what this does not mean is that one of the members of your team is Satan, okay? Satan is also on your team in addition to the members. I taught this a little while back, and I saw people in the room kind of looking around like, yeah, I think it's that one. I'm pretty sure it's her. I always do it. It's not like that, okay? But Satan is also on your team. So here's your scenario, right? You're sitting around with your leadership team and you're discussing your agenda and you're talking about important things, and then all of a sudden, Satan appears on his throne, and all of a sudden you're like, man, I really hate that person over there. Why does she always say that? I can't stand the way he, you know, and all of a sudden you hate all these members of your team. And it's because you have an opponent, you have an enemy, and that's his primary goal, is to make you hate these people. We know that Satan is not omnipresent, but we know that he has a lot of resources, and he knows how to utilize those resources well. And I think, I mean, for my church, Xenos Christian Fellowship, I believe we are a great church. So I'm certain that he is sending a lot of his resources our way. And the place he's going to focus on within a home church is not the average members, but a leadership team. He's going to come after that team. If you can divide the team, the church will fall. And so that's his primary goal. So again, you probably think you have a great church too. And if you're part of a leadership team within that church, you've got to believe that Satan is highly focused on your group, okay? We believe he's even here today with us. I saved him a seat. He's sitting right up front here. So this is Satan's seat. He's going to be with us today. He's not very happy with what we're talking about, and so he's going to do whatever he can, even in this meeting, to get us distracted, to have this apply to anyone other than me, right? That's what he does. Okay, so what this comes down to is what is called Satan's accusation ministry. Now, if you are part of Xenos Christian Fellowship and you've taken classes, you know the four different directions that Satan accuses. Who can think of what any of those are? Anyone know any of these four different directions which Satan accuses? Danny, you know any?
Us to each other.
Okay, so people to each other. What are some others? Yeah.
Us to God.
People to God. Good. What others?
God.
He accuses God to people. Very good. And? Yeah, look at you guys. All right, I will tell them. You guys don't need to retake your classes. You passed, okay? So, he accuses people to God. This is like the scene at the beginning of Job, where Satan goes to God and says, Job only follows you because you create a hedge around him. He's accusing this person to God, right? And he does the opposite. He accuses God to people in the garden with Eve. Did God really say? He knows that. He's accusing the character of God to a person. He accuses people to themselves. So you're about to give a teaching, and you fall into some sin. And what are your thoughts? Oh, my goodness, I shouldn't be the one doing this. There's shame. There's guilt. There's all these reasons that I am not equipped or adequate or right to be able to teach. That's him accusing you to yourself. But then, of course, there's this fourth category. He accuses people to each other, where I start having these negative thoughts, these negative feelings toward other people. That's from Satan. That's his accusation. And that's the one we're going to focus on this morning. Satan's accusation of this person to me. Why this person is evil and awful and terrible, and why I should resent and hate them. Now, you got to see, this is pretty easy target for Satan, right? I mean, we are so sinful that he could take just about anything about me and put it on your mind, and you're going to be annoyed by me or bitter toward me. There's so many ways he can do this. And then, of course, our main sin is our own self-righteousness. So I'm sitting here thinking about all the terrible things about you and how much better I am than you. So Satan doesn't have to do much here to get us accusing each other and get us divided against each other. So this is his goal, this is his job that he's doing. He's accusing us against each other. We know that the Bible strongly backs up that this is how Satan works. Here's three passages that directly connect Satan with this area of accusation. Think of 2 Corinthians 2:11. He says, so that no advantage would be taken of us by Satan, for we're not ignorant of his schemes. Now, the context of this is they had removed a brother from their church for sin, and Paul is writing, he says, I want you guys to forgive this brother so that no advantage would be taken of us by Satan. Do you see the point? When there's a lack of forgiveness that has taken place between two parties, that's bad. But in addition to that, Satan takes advantage and produces all the worst thoughts that could happen. They won't forgive me because they're terrible. Or the other way, right? We shouldn't forgive this guy. Look what he's done. And so Satan takes advantage when there's a lack of forgiveness. That's the point. Or how about in Ephesians 4? Be angry and yet do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger and do not give the devil an opportunity. So unresolved anger is an opportunity for the devil. If you've got anger toward another member of your leadership team and you've let the sun go down on that anger, that's an opportunity. Satan now is telling you more and more and more just how awful that person is and why you're mad at them, and you gain resentment and you grow bitterness toward this person. Satan eats up this. This is what he's doing. And then in James 3, look at this. He's connecting bitter jealousy or selfish ambition that I might have. He says those things are demonic. These are the type of things that are relational sins. This is from Satan. He's doing all that he can to keep us resenting each other and hating each other. So we could talk a lot more verses about this. This is clearly what Satan's doing. And I'm sure I don't need to give a lot of Bible verses. Anecdotally, you probably know that it's easy to resent people, especially people that you're leading with, because this is exactly what Satan does. So for our morning here, I'm just going to look at three of what I think are the most common, three common targets. I don't know if they're the most common targets, but I don't know that they get spoken of enough. And so that's kind of my goal. I don't want this to be just things you know. I hope this is like insightful. And I've been leading on a leadership team for the past 13 years. I've been coaching leadership teams for about 11 years. And I've seen some patterns in ways that Satan tends to divide teams and get them hating each other. And so that's what we're going to look at. I'm going to give you three of them. And then we'll end by looking at three different ways that we can proactively kind of thwart Satan's work, okay? So one of the common targets that I see a lot is assumptions about their unspoken thoughts. So I'm in some meeting or I'm in some conversation with a co-leader. It's not what they said, it's how they said it. It's the body language they had when they said it. It's what they didn't say. Did you notice that he looked at me and then he looked away when he said that thing? Yeah, I know exactly what he's thinking. So I'm not judging where we're at by their actual words, but by what I'm perceiving they meant by the words. And Satan loves that and he eats it up. Now, C.S. Lewis is great on this one. Screwtape Letters is that classic book by Lewis where the demons write letters to each other, okay? And you get insight into how Satan thinks. So this is between a boy and his mom here, okay? This is the conversation. See if you can relate to this. Your patient must demand that all his own utterances are to be taken at their face value and judged simply on the actual words, while at the same time judging all his mother's utterances with the fullest and most oversensitive interpretation of the tone and the context and the suspected intention. I mean, isn't that exactly what we're talking about here? That's exactly what Satan does. I expect you to only take my words and don't read it anymore. Meanwhile, I have an oversensitive interpretation of your tone, the context which you said your thing, what I'm suspecting, your intention for why you said what you said. And Satan just eats off of that. He loves that. Well, he says, he goes on, she must be encouraged to do the same to him. Hence, from every quarrel, they can both go away convinced, or very nearly convinced, that they are quite innocent. You know the kind of thing. I simply ask her what time dinner will be, and she flies into a temper. He says, once this habit is well established, you have the delightful situation of a human saying things with the express purpose of offending and yet having a grievance when offense is taken. This is when it's a big pattern and when that's been going on for a while. Now I am coming into the room and I'm so bitter and resentful toward this person. I'm careful with my words, but clearly I want them to know that I'm angry with them. And then they get angry. What? What did I say? What did I, you know, why are you mad at me? That's when you're in a bad place, is when it gets to that point. But what we're getting at here is that we've got to be really careful with our assumptions about our co-leaders' unspoken thoughts. A lot of times it tends to be our own insecurities, an area that we're already insecure in, that we suspect they're judging us or they're pointing out or they're noticing. And so we focus on that. I'll give you an example. So in my leadership team, I'm in charge of coming up with the agenda for the leaders' meeting. And there's a lot of times I'm sitting in the middle of that meeting and I'm just thinking to myself, these people think this is pointless. They would so much rather be anywhere but here. They all think, why are we even talking about this? Why is this the thing he came up with to talk about? And I sit there and I chew on that and I, you know, fight through that in my mind. And recently on the drive home, I told my wife that. I'm like, they probably hated that, didn't they? And she's like, oh, I don't know. I honestly was just thinking the whole time about that comment that I made. No one said anything afterwards. They think I was stupid for making that comment. And you see what happens? We all just think about ourselves and what everyone else must be thinking about us. Nobody said either of those things. And so it is really good to have someone to check this kind of thing with, as opposed to just mulling it over in your mind for the next several hours and growing resentment and bitterness toward your teammates. So I've got, you know, my wife or a close friend I'll often go to. Sometimes I'll even go to the person who I'm suspecting I'm making assumptions about their unspoken thoughts. Sometimes I'll do that, but you don't want to do that all the time. A lot of times you can just go to a friend and say, here's something I'm thinking. Am I crazy here? Tell me. Now think about this. What's the worst case scenario in this situation? Worst case scenario, they do have negative thoughts toward you. And they chose wisely not to say them, right? Are you going to tell me you've never had negative thoughts toward that person and you didn't say something and it was the right choice? Come on now. Give them the same freedom that you want to take of being able to not like a situation and still not have to express that. Has anybody ever seen the movie The Invention of Lying? Ricky Gervais movie? It's a comedy because they can't not say the thoughts on their mind. And it's hilarious because it's also negative. You wouldn't want that situation. Now, that's the worst case scenario. More likely, you're reading way too much into their body language and your assumptions, and you just need to learn how to drop it. You got to do that 2 Corinthians 10:5. I'm going to take this thought captive to the obedience of Christ. I'm not going to let this thought with no backing and no evidence be what dictates how I feel toward this person. I'm going to be suspicious of my suspicions. Something we've got to learn how to practice. Because we have this all the time where we feel this person must think this thing. They've never said anything toward that. You've got to drop it. So that's one of the common targets for Satan. Wonder if that's something that's been going on in your team. You're assuming way too much of what people aren't even saying. And that Satan loves it. He works with that. Another common target is Satan. Have you ever seen this chart before? This is things that are true about you, okay? So things about you that you know and everyone else knows. We call that common knowledge. Okay, I've got brown hair. You guys can see it. I look in a mirror. I know it. Everyone knows it. What are things that you know that nobody knows? Well, maybe, unless you express them, I guess, right? What else? What would we call those? Secrets, right? Hopefully not too many of those. Now, things that you don't know and nobody knows. We call those mysteries. Now, there's probably some of those, right? I haven't learned this about myself yet, and it's not evident to others yet either. There's probably some of those, and in 10 years I'll know it, and maybe you'll know it too. But then there's this fourth category, things you don't know about yourself, but that everyone else knows. What do we call those? Anybody know? Yeah, blind spots. Okay, blind spots. This is our second area, a common target of Satan for accusing us against each other. Now, I think we all probably have blind spots, okay? But there are some blind spots, in my experience, that Satan can use more than others to get people hating each other. All right? So one of them is the type of person who is a fighter and who is strongly opinionated on just about everything and, you know, is a driver, knows how to lead and wants to push forward and will fight for their points. Do you know the type of person? That type of person tends to come off in a difficult way. And they have no idea, but everybody else on the team can't stand some of those aspects of that person. That's a pretty common situation. In fact, most leadership teams have one person like that. And of course, no one tells that person because they're afraid of that person and they don't want to get in a fight with that person. And so maybe they give some subtle hint, you know, an indirect kind of comment. But the problem with that is this type of person does not read subtlety very well. And they have no idea how they come off. And they think everything is just fine. Meanwhile, all the other members of this team waste hours of their time just thinking about what it's going to be like to be in that meeting with that person. Dreading, you know, using their emotional capacity. 90% of their emotions for that week go into thinking about this conversation with this person. And guess what? Satan does not sit by and just let that happen. Oh, he's thrilled to say, see, you hate that person. Look at that person. Wouldn't your team be better if that person were not? Don't you just hope they don't show up to the meeting? Don't you hope that you can move on without him? And so you've got this situation where the one person has no idea or very little idea maybe, and everyone else spends a lot of time fearing or resenting or bitter toward that person. What we're talking about here is the impact, not the intention. Do you understand the difference? Because again, the fighter, it's not that they're intending to make everyone hate them. They don't think that way. They don't know. But the impact that they have is what makes everyone else resent them. Now, I'm coming off kind of hard on that person because that's kind of me, okay? I don't know if it's so much of a blind spot anymore if I'm able to say it out loud, right? I'm sure the exact impact I have is still I'm learning. But a lot of times my wife will tell me, hey, so-and-so told me today that she feels really intimidated by you. And I'm like, okay, what am I supposed to do with that? You know, why doesn't she come tell me? You know, what did I do? And on the one hand, I'm upset about it. But on the other hand, it's like, I can't really argue the point. What am I supposed to say? No, she's not. That would be ridiculous, right? It's not my intention, but this is the impact I'm having. It's not a discussion. It's a statement of fact. And so the more I learn that, the more this starts to move over here, right? I'm moving from my blind spot to more of a common knowledge where I now know this is true too. And so we've got to find ways to move this from blind spot to common knowledge. You got to tell the person. And a couple hints on that. I would not do it in the leaders' meeting. That's not going to work well, okay? One-on-one, these things tend to go way better than in a big setting. You got to be loving and you got to be direct and clear. Now, normally, which of those would you err on? You'd err on the side of loving, right? In this situation, I'm not sure. You want to be loving, but man, the person usually can take a little less love, but they can't take a little less direct because it's a blind spot. They will not see it. They have no idea. You got to be clear. A few specific examples do what you can to make it clear in a loving way. Help them to see this. And over time, like for has happened for me, you'll slowly move them into that common knowledge area. Now, that's one way to solve this. The other way, too, is look in the mirror. Maybe you are that person, right? Do you know how you come off? Do you have any idea? Do people correct you often? If not, is it because they're afraid of you and you're just happy with the situation? Maybe you're the person. So it's worth it to say, look, I know that I'm really opinionated and I know that I like to fight for my points. Tell me if my impact has been negative on you. I want to know that. You give your team the green light to approach you on this, and you squash everything that Satan can do with that. All that emotional energy and time can be killed by moving this from a blind spot to common knowledge. So that's one of the areas for a blind spot I think are common. I think there's another one, which is ironically like the exact opposite of the fighter. It's the really fragile person who, you bring something up at a leader's meeting and they just shut down, or they start crying, or, you know, it's just like how much time you spend thinking exactly how you need to word this or how you're going to do this so that you don't hurt this person. It's a similar impact where you start to resent that person because of how much work you have to put in to just show up to a leader's meeting. You hope they don't get there. Maybe they won't be there and we can have an easy meeting, you know. It's that same kind of result that Satan then uses to make you resent and hate that person. And it's the same point for us. We need to point that out. We need to show that. Look, here's what happens. I'm afraid to bring things up because you've shut down. Here's a few specific examples of that. Now, on that one, you might want to err more on the loving side than the direct side. But either way, we've got to point these things out. And again, look in the mirror. Is that you? How does your team perceive you as someone that they can't bring certain things up? Anytime that the idea of splitting this home church and starting a new group, you just clearly are against that, so they're afraid to bring it up. If that's you, recognize that and start to go to your teammates and say, look, I don't want to be a tool of Satan here. Do you have trouble with the impact that I have because I'm a fragile person? That would be a humble thing to do. It would be a good thing to do. So the blind spots of the fighter and the fragile person, I think, are easy targets for Satan to bring accusation. There's others as well, I'm sure. We got some hands. Let's hear them after the teaching, okay? I'm sure we got plenty others. And again, I hate to pick on people. We've all got blind spots, but I do see in my experience that that's what Satan uses a lot. Okay, one more common target here. Differences in ministry philosophies. So you got a church like Xenos. One of the things I think is so impressive is how much everyone knows what we're trying to do here. What's our church about? You ask an elder that, you ask someone that's been around for 6 months, and they usually get it. It's a pretty similar answer. We believe in evangelism and discipleship and a close-knit community. You'd hear something along those lines, regardless who you ask, okay? That's called the wine. That's the values we hold. Now, how do you go about accomplishing those values? How do you go about preserving those values? We call those wineskins. And those vary quite a bit. Your ministry philosophy, how you go about accomplishing your values, can vary a lot, and Satan can use that against each other. So I'll give you a couple examples. One would be in our church, the student versus adult. Okay, our student ministries is very clearly distinct from our adult ministries, something a little bit unique about Xenos. And Satan tends to use that against us. And so people in the student ministries can easily see the weaknesses of the adult ministry and focus on that and therefore be bitter toward that. And Satan doesn't just sit idly by. He amplifies that anger and bitterness. He brings up the worst possible examples in the adult group so that the students can focus on that. And vice versa. The adults look at the weakness of the student ministry, and Satan amplifies that, and they hate it, and they hear that. Of all the stories they could have heard about Epic, they hear this one story, you know, that made student ministry look bad. And that's what Satan then chews on in their mind and uses. Oh, so Satan does this. Now, that's at a big picture for our church, but even on a leadership team, like my leadership team in the adult ministry, four of us came up from student ministries 2 years ago, and the other four have never been in student ministries. And so we've learned different ministry philosophies. We 100% agree upon the essentials, the values, but how you go about accomplishing those values is quite a bit different. And so we've seen a lot of tension on our team over that. We'll talk about basic things like, what does it mean to disciple someone? What are you looking for in that? What should that time look like? Vast differences, pretty hard to overcome differences. And Satan uses that against us. One way we tried to combat this was we spent the beginning of a leaders meeting, hey, let's all go around and talk about what we've learned from the others. So those that came out of student ministries, what have we learned in the last year and a half or 2 years from these people that were in the adult ministry? And I'll tell you, that was a humbling experience for me, because I honestly could only think of things that I thought they should have learned from me by now. And I don't joke by that. That's literally what was going through my mind, is I hope they've learned this, 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 and this of how I do these things right. And, oh my goodness, what a waste. Why can't I learn from them? I'm too good for that? It was terrible. It was humbling. The other one is the pastoral missional difference. So this doesn't matter what part of the church you come from, what age you are, anything like that. Some people are just built more pastorally and some are more missional. By pastoral, I mean like the good shepherd. You care for the individual sheep. You can see the person that's hurting. You love to go and help them. You see how people are struggling. You move them up in their walk with God. Some people really think that way. Other people are more missional, where they're like, okay, we've got a goal. We want to plant a new home church. This is A, B, and C we got to do. I hope these people come along, but if not, you know, we're moving this direction. And you've got these people who think differently about how to do church, therefore, and they're on a leadership team together, and Satan can use that against them. What he tends to do, Satan loves to dichotomize syncretism. And so you've got these two things that could work so well together and be combined for great, and Satan pits them against each other. And so all you focus on is the weakness of the other side. So you've got the student versus an adult. Man, there are such strengths in both of those ministries. If we could focus on those and utilize those together, what a wonderful thing that could be for a home church or for our church. But Satan pits them against each other. Or again, the pastoral missional. Think about if you were on a leadership team and not one person on that team was missional. How terrible would that be? You're just sitting around talking about all the things that are hurting with these people. You're never focused on growing and moving forward as a church. That'd be rough. I wouldn't want to be on a team like that. What if you were on a leadership team with everyone was missional? And again, you got some person about to lose their faith and you haven't even talked about them because you're moving forward in the church. That'd be terrible. Thank God that he, in his sovereignty, almost probably always puts together leadership teams that have a combination of these type of people. He has put each member into the body just as he has determined, like it says in 1 Corinthians 12. And so he's got your team with a nice mix of this. Are you fighting him on it and following Satan's lead of judging all the worst in these people that are different than you? Or are you using this to say this? What a strength. What a great thing we've got. Both sides of this. Okay, so those are the three of the common targets. Again, at the end here, I'd love to hear some more if you guys can think of some, but those assumptions about what they haven't even said, people's blind spots that drive us crazy, we won't point out, and these differences in ministry philosophies. Satan can work with quite a bit of just that there, but I'm sure there's others as well. Okay, so let's spend a little bit of time here talking about thwarting Satan then. Like Psalm 146 says, God thwarts the ways of the wicked, so we want to thwart the evil one. How do we fight against it? Now, I've been talking about this throughout our session. I've given a lot of practical, specific things, but those have all been reactionary. You need to go talk to that person with the blind spot. Check your assumptions that you're having, right? Those are reactionary. I'll give you three proactive ways as a leadership team now to be in a position where you're less likely to be taken down by Satan. Okay? Number one, just vote him off the team. Okay? Get a vote together and say, we'd like Satan to be off. Raise your hand. Ain't going to work. All right? Satan is kind of like that real awkward person in your home church that you're like, man, how do we have a party and not get him here? Maybe, you know what? I'm not going to use the group line. I'll just send individual texts. What happens? He shows up early and he stays late, right? That's like Satan. Satan is there, ready, eager. You can't get rid of him. He's on the team, and he's on the team for good. Maybe just let him lead then. All right, Satan, what do you got to say? Well, that's not going to work either. Satan's not like a passive leader. He's gunning for senior leadership of the group. So we got to think of something else here. Take a look at these verses, okay? The most common imperative in regard to Satan, the most common thing that we're supposed to do in regard to Satan, when you look at all the verses of Satan, it's almost always there. Look at what do all these have in common? We're not ignorant of his schemes. Satan is disguising himself. So we should be on the alert. Be alert and sober. Be sober on the alert. Always, almost always, in regard to Satan, the most important thing for us is awareness. Awareness. Proactive awareness of Satan. That's what Scripture tells us. You also have the light and darkness metaphor in the Bible. Like Paul says in Acts 26, he turned from darkness to light, and then he says what that is, from the power of Satan to God. So we know this. Satan works in the dark. There's all kinds of verses about darkness and light. Satan's arguments are so bad that he has to do them secretly. Because compared to what God's offering, he's got nothing. So he has to do it in the darkness, in secret. And the moment he's exposed to the light, not all of his power is vanquished, but most of it. There's still something tempting there, but most of that power is gone the moment it's exposed to the light. Have you ever been in a conversation with someone and there's just all this tension and someone has that supernatural wisdom in the moment to say, I think there's some spiritual attack going here. And so you take a little step back and you think about what you've been fighting about, and it's almost laughable. It's laughable. We got in that big of a fight about whose turn it was to do the dishes. Like, come on now. This is Satan. And what happens? It just kills so much of that power. So we have to find ways to proactively be aware of Satan. Now, what did I do at the beginning of the meeting? I set a chair out for Satan, right? And it's cheesy and whatever, you know, it's goofy. But that was kind of my intention, is let's be proactively aware of Satan. What are you doing on your leadership team to make sure you're doing this? We actually did this in my leadership team not that long ago. We were having a lot of tension. And so we literally set a chair out. We said, all right, that's Satan's chair. Let's spend the beginning of our time praying against him. And I'll tell you what, that was the best leadership meeting I ever had. Those insecurities I had about the agenda and what these people must have thought of me, oh my gosh, it was gone. It was great. It was a great meeting. You don't want to be overly aware of him and fearful of him and hypersensitive to Satan, but I think we're far from that error. I think we're much more on the other side of it, where maybe you've been on a leadership team that's been in tension for months and no one has even mentioned the word Satan. He's winning, okay? He's getting everything he wants out of that situation. You got to bring him into the light. Find ways to proactively do that. Another way to thwart the evil one is getting time together. Honestly, if you know, you guys have been listening to a lot of workshops the last couple of days here. If you've zoned out for about 30 minutes, this is probably the biggest burden I have for the whole thing, time together. If the only time you're getting with your co-leaders is that monthly leaders meeting that tends to get canceled anyway, that's not enough. That's not enough to fend off what Satan's doing here. I bet you're not spending a lot of time at the actual Bible studies talking to your co-leaders, because you know what? You got work to do and they got work to do. And so this very key relationship, which is really holding together a church, is just fragile as can be because you're too busy for each other and you just don't get time together. Not good enough. We got to make time. Here's my suggestion. At least every other week, scheduled time with a same gender leader or same gender leaders, either way. Make that happen. Now, I know what you're thinking, Ryan, you don't understand. I'm way too busy for that. I've already dropped so many things just so I can keep the schedule I've got. I don't have time for that. Well, I don't know what to tell you, okay? You got to make it happen. Maybe you just need to look at it as this is your way of bearing the cross as a leader. Have you thought about that? What is your way of uniquely bearing the cross because you've signed up for leadership? Maybe this is it. Other people get to have that extra night a week where they get to go and just chill out finally and relax a little bit, and you don't get to have that because you're a leader and there's too much at stake and you need to fight for this time with this person or with these people. You could think of like the Philippians 1:29. This is the verse you need to apply to yourself here. For to you it has been granted for Christ's sake, not only to believe in him, but also to suffer for his sake. How are you as a Western Christian uniquely suffering as a leader in your group? Maybe this is it. You're going to have to fight for that time. You get to fill up what is lacking in Christ's afflictions by scheduling time with these people and hanging out with them. Now, I think if you gain that type of mindset, I bet you will schedule it, and I bet you'll make it happen. And then you know what will end up happening? Most of the time, you're going to really appreciate that time. You're going to have some fights, and you know, sometimes I'm driving home, and it's like, man, that was a rough one. But most of the time, I'm just thinking, man, I'm so grateful that I'm in the yoke with this other person. They're doing the exact same thing I'm trying to do here. And we're trying to sell out for Jesus Christ, and we're in this together. I'm so thankful I have a friend like that. My closest friends in my life now are people that I've led home churches with, and we fought for that kind of time. We've made that happen, and there's a unique bond. So look at it as bearing the cross and then reap all the benefits from it. Whatever you got to do, make it happen. Today, go talk to your co-leaders and say, look, we have gone too far in the wrong direction here. We got to fight for time. I'm going to be flexible. When can we make this happen? Let's get time. And in that time, it's not, okay, let's talk through all the agendas in the home church. It's more, let's build a friendship. What's going on in your life? How's your marriage? What are your friendships looking like? What are you doing at your work? You build that type of rapport, and then all the other things we've talked about this morning, you can work through so much easier because you've got that friendship, and Satan has such less of a grip on your thoughts toward that person. I think this is especially good for the blind spot person, you know, the fighter. Because the fighter in a group setting, one-on-one, is usually very cool to hang out with. For whatever reason, they're a fighter in a group, they're a leader, that's probably a good thing, let them do it. But then one-on-one, you get more time with that person, you judge them less, you hate them less, and you're going to love them, you're going to like them. Get some time together with your leaders. And then finally here, number 3, Philippians 4:8. Who knows what Philippians 4:8 says? What's Philippians 4:8?
I mean, I don't know the whole thing, but it's like whatever is good, lovely, pure, wholehearted, meditate on those things.
You got the two that I want to focus on most. Whatever is good and whatever is lovely. Dwell on those things as a leadership team. Look, it's pretty easy as a leadership team to dwell on what is, you said good and lovely.
Yeah, good, lovely, pure.
Let me say it again. Whatever is true and whatever is lovely. Okay? It's easy as a leadership team to focus on what is true and not so lovely, isn't it? You could spend hours upon hours talking about all the true negative things going on in our home church. That's pretty easy. But you need to focus on what is true and lovely. Let your mind dwell on these things. That's what we're commanded to do. When we focus on all the negatives, Satan just eats that up. We just walk away from this leaders meeting feeling like terrible. We hate what we're doing. We got to find ways to focus on both what's true and what's lovely. A few different ways my groups tried to do this. we had different people come in with a reading. So your job was to find a few pages of a chapter of a book or a chapter from the Bible, and let's read that out loud together, and then let's talk about that a little bit, something that's going to get our minds on good things, and then let's pray together. And that's like 15 minutes or so of our leaders meeting. And you're like, whoa, we've got an agenda. I can't spend 15 minutes doing that. Throw the agenda away, okay? If as a leadership team, you guys all love Jesus and are happy about leading, your church is going to follow. If you got that agenda perfectly down and you're all bitter and resent leadership and think only negative thoughts, your home church is going to suck. You've got to be able to not be so focused on agenda and more focused on the quality of the leader's relationship with Christ, their positive outlook, their excitement about leading. So much more important for your church. Believe me. Another thing we've tried to do as a team is we've, each meeting we've come in knowing whose turn it was, and we're all going to build that person up. We're going to encourage that person. Here's where we think you're gifted. Here's what we've seen you do lately. And get our minds on positive things that way. That's a good way to get over that pastoral missional thing, by the way. Because I'm thinking of someone who's much different than me, and I start to realize, wow, thank God they're on this team. What would we do on this team without that person? It's positive thinking about that. And you get to encourage a co-leader. You're like, nah, he's a leader. He doesn't need encouraged. You know, he's supposed to be tough, right? Leaders, you don't need encouraged. That's a lie. I think I used to believe that. We need as much or more than anyone, especially from a co-leader. When's the last time you've encouraged one of your co-leaders? Man, that's important. It goes so far. It can be lonely in leadership. We need to fight for encouraging people. Don't worry. They're going to have to deal with it if you're encouraging them too much. You just encourage them, okay? And then what we're doing right now as our team is we're going around and at the beginning of the meeting. It's always good to do that at the beginning of the meeting, not the end, right? The beginning of the meeting, going around, everyone's saying one good thing going on in our home church right now. And it's got to be different. And so if you're at the, I'm on an 8-person leadership team, so if I'm the last one to go, sometimes it's like, man, I got to be pretty creative to think of something else good here. That's good. It's a good thing for me to fight to have to think about. How about I get to lead even though I'm a sinner and totally unqualified and I've been saved by grace and Jesus died for me. Those are good things. Those are true things. So find different ways, especially at the beginning of a leaders meeting, to get focused on things that are good and true and lovely. And Satan, again, his power is at least limited at that point. You're doing something proactive to get ahead of what he's trying to do. So there's our little list there. All right. Unspoken assumptions, blind spots, ministry philosophies. Now, we've got time for questions and answers. Let me leave you just with one image here. I wonder if you guys know what this is from. Anybody know what movie this is from? Mackenzie, do you know what it's from?
It's from one of the
Chronicles. Yeah. Which one? Oh, man. Mackenzie knows her Narnia movies. This is from Prince Caspian, the Telmarine Army. These are the bad guys. They're about to cross this bridge and kill all the Narnians. And you pan, the camera pans to the other side of the bridge. And who's over there? No, Lucy Pevensey. The youngest. And she's holding a knife. And she's like, bring it on, guys, you know? And it's, you know, it's almost comical. But then they pan back to the army. And the army's like, you know, shaking and moving backwards. And you're like, what? That doesn't make any sense. And then they pan back to Lucy and you see, oh, you see why they were afraid, Aslan. And you see why she's so confident. It's not because of her, it's because of him. And they have right to be because he destroys the entire army, kills every single one of them. And I think that's a good image for us. We can sometimes get so overwhelmed. I'm on this team and we just can't get it right. We've been fighting for unity. There's so many things that go through my mind about these people that are wrong and negative, and you get overwhelmed with Satan's presence. And that's when you got to remember that you're just Lucy, but don't worry, you've got Aslan with you. You've got these great verses that you get to focus on. Greater is he that is in you than he who is in the world. God is more powerful than Satan, and he's on your side, and he's thrilled to help you here. James 4, resist the devil and he will flee from you. Draw near to God and he will draw near to you. Those are a couple promises we've got to go to when we're feeling overwhelmed by the difficulty of preserving unity on a leadership team. Okay, that's all we got for this morning.
The devil is easy to
Well, thanks, Lord. Just that your word warns us so much about how to think of Satan. Thank you that you've given all these guys a lot of practical experiences themselves, and you've given us some stuff to think about today. I pray that we would not just walk out of here and move on, but that we could implement one or two things we thought about today. Pray for stamina for the rest of this conference, too. Thank you for this conference and all that we're learning here. Pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.